back to our marriage series. As I've told you, in the series that I take people through, I do pre-marriage, and that's what we've been doing. I mean, you guys have all sat through for the past couple of months what I normally do in a pre-marriage, or if someone comes in that says, you know what, we need to have, you know, someone to help us with our marriage, and we need to do a marriage course, if you will, I will do that with those that are already married also. But in virtually all of the marriage, you know, counseling that I do, that comes into across my path, I have found that there are two main areas where couples struggle the most. What do you think that they are? What is it? Money, very good. And we'll say intimacy, because it's PG-13 here this morning, okay? And I will say this also, that we got to throw three in. Mari and I talked about this also. Communication is also one of the big areas. But in all reality, isn't that really at the kind of the foundation of both of those other two? That if there's bad communication in the area of money, it does affect the sexual part of the relationship. And if there's no communication, then, you know, the sexual side gets messed up. And I mean, communication really is an underlying issue that affects both of those particular areas. But it's usually, you know, we'll say intimacy and money. And so we dealt with the subject of intimacy on a Sunday evening. And, you know, that one's PG-13, so if you weren't able to be here on that Sunday night, many of you have asked, did you guys record it? Yes, we did. You can get it through the bookstore. You can go over there and get that. And we'll have the whole thing on a CD, you know, on like a little set when we're all finished. So we have covered many areas over the past couple of months, many different subjects. And honestly, I really struggled in sharing this particular subject with you today, especially right before Christmas, you know. It's honestly, it's a subject that for me personally, I'm very uncomfortable talking about it. And the reason is that most of the time, you know, people that visit a church are just waiting for the pastor to go there. They're just waiting for him to mention the subject of money. And, you know, then they can say, there it is. See, I'm out of here. He's just like everybody else. You know, that's all that church is, just begging for money. And there we go. See, I knew it. All they talk about is money. And so, you know, if you have been here with us for any length of time, you know this is not one of those subjects that we talk about virtually rarely. And the only time that I will talk about it is when we come to it as we're going through the Bible book by book, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. When we hit it, we talk about it. And I don't do special messages to hit you guys up. And, you know, and so if you're just visiting today, you happen to hit on a Sunday where we're going to deal with this. And I thought about, you know what, I'll wait till after Christmas because everybody's going to think that, you know, I'm going to bang on you for money. And, you know, but you happen to hit on one of those rare Sundays. But with that said, you can tell that I'm backpedaling and justifying myself. Can you tell that right now? Okay, Barrett, just making sure that it's, you know, I'm cheap about this, okay? So it will be in the context of marriage, all right? So that's how and why I'm going to approach the subject. Also, I was talking with Joel, who was just up here. He's also the crown leader, that is our kind of our financial ministry leader. And, you know, Joel asked me, he goes, so are you going to talk about, you know, godly couples and how they handle their finances? I said, nah, I don't think, Joel, I think I'm going to let you handle that. We'll just leave that one alone. He goes, no, you have to do it, Rob. You have to, because it's affecting many marriages. And especially, you guys, as we're watching times get crazy. Are we watching times get crazy? And so let me say right off the bat, as I continue to justify, as I continue to defend my position, I am not making a plea for your money today. So relax, okay? I'm not going to ask you to take out your checkbook and hold it in the air. I'm not going to ask you, you know, we're not going to pass the plate again, all right? I only hopefully want to help you in an area that is a problem area for most of the marriages that I talk to. It is one of those areas of great difficulty, and if it is a problem in your marriage, hopefully this will at least whet your appetite. And also, for those of you that are here today that are single, if marriage is in the future for you, let me just tell you something right now. You better talk about this before you say I do. Because if you wait until after, that's when the fireworks begin. And maybe if you're here today and, you know, you're single and you're saying, I don't intend on getting married. Well, there will be something here, hopefully, for you also. So then, how do we begin and where do we do this? How do I kind of, you know, take you into this, down this path? Well, let's turn to Proverbs chapter 30 first, okay? Because I want to see, you know, there's that show that is on TV that says, are you smarter than a fifth grader, right? Well, I want to make sure that we're wiser than an insect, okay? And by the way, on New Year's Eve, Toby is going to do a smarter than, are you smarter than a fifth grader kind of thing on New Year's Eve, so you better come prepared for that one. And so let's find out, you know, let's just talk about something that has to do with wisdom. And we're going to start off in a couple places where you're going to go, what in the world? Look what it says, Proverbs 30, verse 24. Now this, interestingly enough, wasn't written by Solomon, but it was written by another guy named Agur, A-G-U-R. And look what happens in verse 24. There are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. Okay, so let's find out, are we wise? The ants are a people, not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. If you've ever done any, you know, study, and I could totally spiritualize this, but we're not going to do that today. Maybe a little. And but it's an amazing thing. If you've ever watched ants, man, they are working summer. They're building, they're storing, they're doing all their work in the wintertime. Why? They kind of disappear in the winter. Why? Because they've stockpiled, they've stored. They've been wise during the times of plenty so that when the times of few come around, they're ready for it. Ants are smart. Smart little things. I mean, if you've ever, you know, watched the, you know, Discovery show on ants, it's an amazing little colony, right? But they're little tiny things. But man, are they smart little creatures, right? And as for their, you know, the ants prepare ahead, you know, and even for you and for me, okay, spiritualizing it. While we're here, we have this little bit of time to prepare for eternity, don't we? So it's a very interesting time. But also, what about for us in the area of our financial, you know, stewardship? Are we being wise during the times of plenty so that we know it's times of few come and it's just around the door here, you guys? It's probably, for some of us, already here. The rock badgers, verse 26. And if you look, that'll probably give you a different word other than of a rock badger, right? And they are an interesting little feeble folk, it says. And if you're reading from, you know, New King James says rock badger, it might have hyrax, but literally they're called conies. For those of you that have been to Israel with us, you've seen the little conies. They look like rabbits. They're big little furry, they're furry little creatures. Really cute. And so it says that the we'll call it the conies are feeble folk, yet they make their home in the crags or in the rocks. So the little conies are so amazing. We love when we get out into the bus in Israel in the morning and we take off, right, in the morning time, and the rock badgers come out in the morning and they start laying in the sunshine. And you'll see them laying there. Just cute, man. Some of the daring ones try to cross the road and are not as cute anymore. But, you know, so in their wisdom, they have made their homes in the rock, in the place where it's solid. They've been wise to invest in areas that are solid. They've made their home in the rock, just like you and I. We can take our place, if you will, spiritually. Jesus is the rock, and we need to hide in him. But in the area of, you know, just the way that they are, they store their stuff where the predators can't get to them. In fact, if anything comes near, as they, you know, the hawks or eagles that begin to fly around in Israel, the birds of prey, bam, they're in the rocks and they're safe. And so look at what else it says here. The locusts, they have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. You know, one locust is really not dangerous, but a swarm of locusts can do some serious damage. And what we will find and what you can find out is in times of difficulty, That's times when you, especially you and your spouse, you gotta stick together. Because together as a team, you're a very dangerous pair. But if you split up and become individuals during that time, you become ineffective. And so it is, even this is a picture of the church, that the church needs to stick together because we can do a lot of things when we work together. Verse 28 says, the spider, this is an unfortunate translation, you might have a little letter there that tells you what it says. It literally is a lizard. And in Israel, gecko lizards are all over the place. You see the geckos, you know, at many of the hotels that we stay at. And look what it says. The gecko, we'll say it, the gecko lizard, skillfully grasps with his hands, and it is in the king's palaces. So during that time, you know, they could set up these huge security areas where, you know, no man could get in, but little geckos are all over the place. Did you know that if you looked at a gecko's hands, and they have these little hooks on their hands, and they can climb right up smooth walls? It's an amazing thing. They can crawl across the ceiling, and we've seen them do that. And so the geckos, because of their ability to hold on tight, they get into areas where nobody else can get into. And so for me and for you, it's very, very important, during the times of difficulty, if we're wise, we're going to hang on tightly to the truth of God's word. We're going to hold on to his principles. We're going to hold on to his promises. And don't let go. Let the little hooks in your hand hang on to his word, you guys. And so, how wise are you? Are we as wise as you know, an ant? Are we as smart as a coney? Are we going to stick together like locusts? Are we going to be able to hang on in the difficult days that very well could lie ahead of us in this coming year? Are we going to hang on to the Word of God and the principles of God? Or are we going to let go and not make it into the king's palace, you see? And so let's find out how wise we are. So turn now all the way over to the book of Romans chapter 12, and let's take a look at something else. Romans 12 in verse 3. So are we wiser than a bug? Let's find out, okay? In Romans 12, 3, and I know this kind of, again, is a weird place to be starting something that we're going to talk about, a godly couple, if you notice, a godly couple and their finances. For I say, verse 3, Romans 12, 3, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. And he lists this group of gifts, if you will. He says, for as we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ and individually members of it. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, look what he says, let us use them. Let us use the gifts that God has given to each one of us. Each one of you has a different, unique gift. We did an entire study on the gifts when we went through Romans. But as we have learned, let me launch from that place. As we have learned in marriage, as I shared with you guys just last Sunday, I think I've been telling you every week, it is oftentimes not, you know, we think that it's we're supposed to look for someone that we have everything in common. And even though that sounds very romantic, and yes, there are we need to have some stuff in common, it is oftentimes what you will learn is that opposites attract. Where you're weak, your spouse is going to be strong. Oftentimes where your spouse is weak, you're going to be strong. And so we see that that does happen, and that's the way God designed marriage to be. That we have weaknesses and strengths, and oftentimes God puts us together with someone who, you know, is basically the opposite in those particular areas. And so as we've learned in that area, it's the same thing in our financial life as well. Have you begun to learn that? And here's what I have learned, okay? Some of us are better at saving, and some of us are better at spending. See what I mean? Some of us are better at keeping track and keeping records, and others of us are not good at that at all. And so you know, some of us are better at handling our household books than others, and I have found that this is very, very true in most marriages as well. Most marriages as well. And so today, if you're thinking about marriage, let me tell you, single people, sooner or later, this subject needs to come up, and you need to talk about it long before you get married. Because, you know, if you wait until afterwards, it can turn into a big mess. So let me ask you guys, husbands and wives that are here in the room today, you don't have to answer me, okay? But just this is posing this question to you. In your marriage, who is better at handling the finances? Husband, you, or wives, you? Usually it is one of you that is better than the other at handling your finances. Who is better at keeping track? Who's better at being careful? Who is better with the numbers? And who is better with math? Who's better with the calculator, the computer, if you will? Who is more disciplined with saving and sticking to a budget? One of you is typically, usually, better in the marriage than the other is. And we'll talk about some other, you know, problems with that. So after posing that question, listen to me very, very carefully. Okay, hear what I'm about ready to say. Whoever among you is best at it, listen, should be the one doing it. Now, that doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out. Everyone's, wow, pastor is so wise. And yet you would not believe at how many times I sit and ask couples right sitting in front of me after we get to this particular subject, who's better at handling it? Well, she is. Well, who's handling right now? Well, I am. Well, no. Give her the checkbook. Don't be stupid. No wonder you're in the financial mess that you're in. You know, let the one that's best handle it. Let the one who is the best at it do it. And it's very, very careful, very, very, you know, important that you hear that. And I know there are these guys that say, but Rob, I'm leader of the house, so that means I should do it. So I'm the one that does it. So, you know, well, what did we just read? To everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. In other words, what are you, stupid? Okay? But you need to understand, Rob, I'm the leader, and the, you know, the leader is supposed to handle this stuff. I wonder, who told you that? Okay, who told you that? Listen, leaders, a leader and godly leadership is one who is large enough to realize their weaknesses and to be able to say, because I'm not good in a particular area, I will delegate my weakness to someone who is stronger. Do you not see that in the corporate world, right? You see, you know, people that own businesses that are not very good at handling finances, and so they hire someone to do that for them so that they can then do what they are good at doing. And so, men, if you are a godly leader, and if you're not good at this, it is something you need to delegate to someone who is better. It's very, very important. Delegate that. Be strong enough a leader. Be secure enough in your own manness to say, honey, you're better at doing this, so I'm going to let you do it. All right? It's very, very important. So if the wife is better at handling it, then she should handle it. It's that simple. Now then, this brings up these crazy few areas of conflict that or can create conflict when we first start talking about this. First of all, let me make sure that we deal with an assumption that I am making. I am assuming that you have joined your finances together. I'm making that assumption. So that one person then can have oversight of your joint finances. This is very important, you guys. And this is absolutely essential. Remember what we read back in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, where it said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Now, I've heard many guys teach that only happens in the sexual union. That's not true. That is not what the Hebrew means. The Hebrew literally means they shall become as one person, just as they are in the sexual union, but in all areas they shall become as a united one single person. You see, They shall become as one. Listen, when Jesus was asked questions about this particular subject, Jesus said this, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother," and he quotes the sayings of Moses, "be joined to his wife, the two shall become one flesh." Then Jesus adds in something else. Listen to what he says. "So then, they are no longer two, but one. They have become one, united together." That's what marriage does, you see. Then Jesus goes on to say, "Therefore, what God has made one," what God has joined together, "let not man separate. Let nothing come between them, not even money." And especially, not even money. Don't let that be what creates a division. So let me ask you guys a question. And I'm going on this assumption, and I'm also backing it up if you have not made that correction in your married life. Did you light unity candles at your wedding ceremony? Because do you remember what takes place at a wedding ceremony? Two candles are lit however they are lit, whether it's, you know, kids come and light them, mother-in-laws or whatever. There's two candles that are lit, burning for themselves. Flames are burning, they're consuming themselves. Then you have the one candle in the center. Most of the time, this never gets explained at weddings. I always explain it. The couple go up, take those two individual unique candles, bring them together to light the center candle, then put the other candles back and blow out the fires. Why? Because now the two that once burned for themselves as unique, as individual, have now made the commitment to say, we're going to burn for each other. They maintain their uniqueness, but they've become one. And now they're going to burn together for the things of the Lord. You see? So then, that ceremony becomes a symbolic picture of two becoming one. We're going to join everything together. I had my life, you had your life. We're going to put the two of them together. We're going to have one life, yet maintain our uniqueness, but our individualness is now become one together. It's very important that we grasp this, okay? So then, let me run this by you. Well, this is a scenario that I've heard. Well, Pastor Rob, I have my checkbook. I have my money. I have my account. I have my cars. I have my furniture. I have my stuff. I have my share of the bills. And my spouse has their side. So now let me ask you a question. What part of no longer two, but one, does that, you know, describe? You see what I'm saying? This is very, very important. And believe it or not, as I have talked to many married couples, as Joel has talked to many married couples, this is a problem. And I'm going to describe to you what happens with this. It will only serve to create disunity and distrust. In fact, usually this is happening because two individual stubborn people will not humble themselves. They won't trust each other. So, or one is so prideful they won't let go. And however it happens, it creates a division. They may come together in other areas, but if this is an area that they've separated and they've maintained a separateness, it will always create conflict, always. It will always be a problem. And so, the unity candle means unity. Nothing should separate them, not money, and especially, I would say again, not money. So the first thing, let's fix. You need to join your accounts together. You really need, in according to the Word of God, if we're going to become one, everything needs to be joined together. Because if you've got two people that God brings together and he says, let them now become one together, that means everything. I'll share a little story with you guys. Mari and I first got married. We began doing this, okay, many years ago, not really knowing that it was a biblical principle. But we began to do this. We began to join things together. Now, Mari, when we first met, she lived in Phoenix, Arizona. And so she moved over here to San Diego. And we began by joining our bank account together after we got married. We joined, well, right before we got married, actually, we joined the bank account together. We chose mine because I had a longer track record, even though it was a mess, because it ain't my gift. We joined the two together, so financially we became one. Now, she had a car that she had bought in Arizona that she brought into the marriage. I had a car that I brought into the marriage. Since her car needed to be re-registered in California when we did all of that, my name got put on the registration of her car. So everything is being joined together. Well, one day, and I don't remember how long it was into, you know, that we were married, and one day Mari made reference to, can I borrow your car? To me, and she said this to me, and I said, well, what do you mean, my car? You mean our car? She goes, no. My car became our car, but your car is still your car. And I said, what are you talking about? And she says, well, your name is on my registration, but my name's not on the registration of your car. And I realized she wasn't being smart or, you know, mean-spirited or anything. And it just happened to be a Jaguar that I bought when I was a little kid, you know, and all that. Okay. And, you know, I was into this restoring stuff, and so still do that, actually. And so Mari says, well, you know, that the Jag is yours because my name's not on it. And I looked at her puzzled and went, wow. I said, honey, that's not a big deal. It's still your car. But later that night, the Lord began to really put it upon my heart, and that's when I began to remember, the two shall become one. So, with a quick trip to the DMV, that problem got solved. And here's the deal, you guys. Since that day, for over 28 years, anything that we purchase, both of our names are on it. Even a motorcycle that she will never ride by herself is still her in her name because it's still ours. Everything then becomes ours. Any possession we have, it's ours. We are one flesh. We are one person, if you will. Two unique individuals, but yet we've forsaken the uniqueness to say, no. We're together in this stuff. Anything, do you see? And so, you know, this is a very interesting point because from that point, you know, also, you guys, listen very carefully. For us as godly leaders, if something were to happen to us, it makes it a whole lot easier for her. If something were to happen to her, it makes it a whole lot easier for you. If everything is in joint, if everything is together, you see? So this, you see, is trust. Now, for our wives, men, remember that the most important thing to our wife is trust and security. And when she feels secure, trust is a natural byproduct of that. And so how is it sending a message of trust? How does it build security when we keep two things separate? So for me, by going down to the DMV, having her name put on this car, boom, instantly she felt more secure, trust is restored, and it went a huge, huge distance in creating the security that she needed. Was it that big of a deal? No. If something happened to me, I wanted her to have it. I wanted her to, you know, get rid of it. It's long since gone, but, you know, I wanted her to be able to have it. It is a partnership. If we're going to live as one flesh, it should never be my stuff, my bills, her bills. It should not be that way. That's not one flesh. That is not unity. That is not togetherness. Second, as I contemplate on this, I can tell you, there are a few exceptions to this particular rule. So let me give you the few exceptions that I know. First of all, if you own your own business, okay, then you obviously are going to have a business account, all right? A business account. I'm talking about what takes place between a husband and wife. However, I will tell you this, men, if you own your own business, you obviously have a separate business account, but I will tell you that if you're married, you should have your spouse on the paperwork somewhere because if something happens to you, you don't want a board of directors cutting her out of the picture, you see? So as a responsible, you know, husband who's looking out for the, you know, the welfare of his family, your wife should be on there somewhere. Another one I would say is if you're going to have a separate account, it should not be for the paying of family bills. Only for what we would call mad money, just because I don't have another name for it. I have talked to some couples that say, you know what, man? You know, my husband handles the finances. And so when I want to buy him a gift, I mean, I have to go ask him for some, you know, I have to, you know, stockpile it or I have to do these little things because we're on this budget. And I want to go buy him something and I don't know how to get the money to do that. Or a husband will say that. I want to buy her something, but I have to go say, hey, can I borrow $25 for you because I want to buy you a gift? It makes it a little awkward, right? So you can have these two little separate accounts where you keep and where you two agree to say, this is for when we want to do something special for each other. I want to take her out to dinner, and I don't want to have to figure out how we're going to pay for this because I've been stockpiling a little bit there. But it should always be an open thing to each other. Do you see? The third thing that I would say is an inheritance account. And this is something that, you know, if you are a widow and your first spouse did many things to make sure that you and your children are taken care of and you decide that you get remarried, that should be something that should be a separate thing, because that was a husband saying, I'm taking care of a group of kids. Mari and I have seen the nightmares take place of, you know, blended families coming together, kids trying to divide up stuff between, you know, my real, you know, children, my children, your children, and it can become a real messy, messy thing. And so very wisely, that should be something that you two talk about before you get remarried. If you happen to be a widow who has received an inheritance, that needs to be discussed. It needs to be, if you will, discussed together. That needs to be told or spoken publicly to other children that might have come into the marriage. Look, he set this up for his children. We're not going to mess with that. We're going to leave that alone. Does that make sense? Common sense stuff, right? And even then, it is something that the two of you, I'm just saying that is an exception. So once we have this settled, okay, so I've given you that part of this discussion. Once it's settled, now find out who is best between the two of you. Once everything has been joined together, find out who is best and let that person do it. Now then, listen to me, men. If your wife is better at it, if she is more disciplined, then let her do it. Be a man, delegate it to her, say, look, this is obviously an area where I'm not as strong as you are. I am delegating that to you. It is something that I'm going to, you know, support you in that. And I'll be honest, I mean, honestly, you know, you can talk this over with, you know, virtually most of us guys. In many, I would say probably a good 80% of the marriages that I talk to, it's usually the wives that are doing it because they're better at it. Men are better at going out conquering. We're better to go out there, I'll earn the bread. I'll that's what we're told to do. I'm going to go out and earn the bread and I'll bring it home and you cook it. See, so we as men, we like to be out there conquering, but we don't like that part of the, although I'm not saying all, because I do know some of you men are very, very good, very, you know, you handle it very well. But in most marriages, honestly, it is the wife that handles that. And so, if it's something that you as a man are thinking, well, I got to do it, and you're not good at it, don't be a fool. Run your finances into the ground. I mean, I have literally had to, you know, take checkbooks away from men and give it to their wife and say, don't. You know, from this point forward, you're off limits. You're on restriction, boy, you know, because for some reason we've been told at some marriage conference that it's supposed to be the man that's supposed to do it. That's simply not true. You know, they teach it, men, it's our job to be the finance. Now, men, go and do it. Well, you cannot show me that anywhere in the Bible. Leadership recognizes their weakness and delegates that to someone who's stronger. And so men, feel free to do that. Now then, with that said, this presents some interesting problems. This presents some very interesting possible problems. If you, in a business world, let's just speak of it in a business world for just a moment. If your boss comes to you, or you as a business owner, delegate responsibility to someone, or if someone has delegated responsibility for a project to you, and they have not given you authority to go along with it, they might as well not have given you any responsibility. You see what I'm saying? Because you need to have authority within the responsibility of that sphere that you are in. If someone says, I'm going to give you the responsibility to handle project A, all right, so then I have the authority to make certain decisions, and understanding that the buck stops on your shoes, the decision, ultimate decision making stops with you, but I need the authority to make decisions and to make, you know, choices within that sphere. And you know what it's like when your boss has come and given you authority or given you responsibility but no authority. It's very frustrating, isn't it? And it's the same thing if you're giving as a business owner and you give someone responsibility but you don't give them authority, you will watch them chafe at this new responsibility that you've given. Well, in marriage, it's the same thing. If, for instance, and we'll just go with this for just a moment, if we are going to, let me just assume it here for one moment. Husbands, if you're going to give your wife the responsibility of handling the finances of the home, you also need to give her the authority. Wives, if you have made the decision your husband is better at it, you're a better spender than you are a saver, then the husband has authority or he has responsibility. He must also maintain the authority. So what do I mean by that? What does that mean? How does that equal out? Because if we don't give the authority, it says, I don't trust you. So I'm going to keep an eye on your every move. You see? It sends the message. So you're in Romans. Turn to the right. Let's go back to our marriage chapter, back over to Ephesians, and let me show you something in Ephesians chapter 5. Remember, we've been talking about, or we've used Ephesians 5 quite a bit. And so let's take a look at something. You remember in verse 22, chapter 5, verse 22, where we began, it says, wives, remember what we talked about, submit to your husbands as unto the Lord. Most of the time, that's where we begin when we start talking about marriage. But I want you to do something with me. I want you to go back up to verse 21. Look what it says, submitting to one another in the fear of God. You see that? So there are going to be times within, and then he moves right into, wives, you submit to your own husband. There are going to be times, listen very carefully, where there will be mutual submission. What do I mean by that? Men, as according to the scriptures, according to the book of Ephesians, according to the book of Genesis, according to 1 Peter, you, me, we as men are the leaders of the home. That's the way God designed it to be. And if you want your marriage to be all that it can be, that needs to be the role that we do. We talked about that in depth a few weeks ago. However, will there ever be a time where we might submit to our wife in an area? I think there is. Men, as I shared with you when we went through this, if you are a wise leader, you're going to solicit the information from your wife. You're going to ask her a question. How do you feel about this? Remember, we talked about that. Don't ask her what she thinks. Ask her what she feels about something. She'll tell you what she thinks. Remember, we talked about that. Okay? Secondly, once you've received her input, there may be times where you're going to say, you know what? I like your idea better. That's what we're going to do. Now, see, you and I as men are still ultimately in the place of the authority as God has designed it to be, but we're asking for input, and once we've received that input, it's okay to say, I like that, that's what we're going to do. So then, men, in the case of if you're going to relinquish the responsibility of handling the finances to your spouse, you then must give her the authority. That means in that area, you will be submitted to your wife. Ultimately, the buck stops on your shoe, on our shoe as men. Ultimately, we're responsible how things go down, but there may be times that we need to say, no, I've given you that responsibility, I've given you that authority. So what does that look like? It may be, let's just suppose that you say, okay, Rob, I see what you're saying. I've given my wife that responsibility. I've given her the authority. And this has happened. That's why I'm going to bring it to your attention. So, wife sits down and she starts putting together a budget. She starts working all the finances. She starts paying the bills. She gets you financially on track because she's, you know, better at it. Husband says, I just happened to stop by, you know, Sears, and I saw these new set of tools that I want. And, wow, it would sure make my job a lot easier, so I'll just use my debit card. Bam. Buy it. Pay for it. Come home. Put them in the garage, and forget to tell wife about it. Wife, in the meantime, has been busy paying bills, trying to keep everything responsible. All of a sudden, she starts getting phone calls coming to the house saying, hey, you just bounced this check. You just bounced that check. Wife calls the bank and says, hey, what happened? I had money in the bank. Oh, Well, you know, Mr. Smith was at Sears and he bought $500 worth of tools. Oh, we have a problem, Houston. Right? Because husband didn't tell wife that this was, you know, what he was going to do, and he didn't ask for permission in this particular area. And I know some of you men say, ask for permission. What you talking about? It's my money. I earned it. Shut up and go ask. Okay? So what does this mean? It means that there are times when you're saying, you've got the responsibility, so here's the deal. I will now follow your lead in this particular area. So now, let's just suppose you're at Sears and you say, wow, I see these new tools. What do? Put it on your credit card? No. You call your wife and say, hey, honey, I happen to be at Sears. I see this set that's half off. What do you think? She now will be able to look at the records and say, ooh, I know that that's a great deal, but you know what? It's not a good time right now. I just paid X number of bills, and if we do that, you know, you're going to be balanced. I don't know where the money will come from. Now, at that particular point, man, we need to swallow our pride and say, okay, it'll wait. It'll wait till a later time. And it's the same thing goes in the other way. If the husband is taking care of the finances, wife happens to go down to Macy's, she sees, a brand new, you know, purse and shoe set that match, and she says, ah, I want this. So she puts it on the credit card, doesn't tell hubby, and in fact, you girls are really good about just kind of putting them into the closet, breaking them out 3 weeks later. Husband sees it, and he says, wow, is that new? No, it's not new. Now, you ask, how do I know? I've heard from other people that that happens, okay? So how does wife handle that? She calls husband and she says, listen, you're the one handling the finances. I see this here. It's this great deal at Macy's. What do you think? Husband says, wow, you know, I just happened to look. See, submission needs to take place where then maybe the husband can say, you know what, go ahead and do that because I'll sacrifice this or I won't do this, and so go ahead and do it, and vice versa. So there may be times, men, where we are in charge. We are, if you will, the person is ultimately in authority, and we may need to submit to our wife. Listen, even here in the congregation, even though you say, Rob, well, you're the pastor, yes. Well, you're the decision maker, yes. You're the boss, yes. You're the head hog at the trough. Okay. And but here's the deal. Do you guys understand that I have delegated responsibility to other people, that I give them the authority, and I myself submit to them in the decision-making processes that they do? There are people that Guy, as you guys know, handles the finances. I submit to his leadership in this particular area. I don't just go out and, you know, do what I want and then say, now fix it. That would be bad leadership. That would be sinful leadership. And so it is even within the marriage. Whoever has the responsibility must have the authority, and then the other person needs to submit to that authority even if you don't like it. Because you're saying, I want to be financially responsible. I want things to be the way that they need to be. And so that goes with it, you know, if you will, submitting to one another in the fear of God. And I believe that that does talk about, you know, mutual submission. So then, however, ultimately, husbands, you know, you can sit down with your wife. You can go through these things. You can, you know, spend time with her going through all of these different, you know, particular items. So the next subject that I, before I move on from that. Now, here's the problem. What if you're both good at it? Okay? What if you're both really, you know, accountants? And you're saying, okay, well, you know, we're both really good at it. Okay, well, both of you do it. Or ask the question between the two of you. Who has more time to do that? Who has more access to the computer? Or who has the greater amount of extra time to be the one to handle it? Then, there you go. Let that person do it. Now then, what if you're both bad? What if you get married and, you know, you are, you know, you graduated from Hoover, and your wife graduated from Hoover, so, you know, what if you're both spenders? What if you're both bad savers? What if neither one of you are good with math? What do you do now? Well, you just file bankruptcy and say, forget it. Is that right? No. Here's what you do. You find somebody who is good at it, and you give them the responsibility. You hire them if need be. And let me tell you something. It will be worth what you pay, ultimately, even if it's a friend of yours. There are people that do this. There are people that you can hire that you bring them a shoebox and say, here you go. Here's my monthly expenses. And you drop it on, and they figure it all out for you. And then you submit to them. Because if they are going to put you on some sort of a budget, you need to be submitted to that person. If neither one of you are good at handling finances, find someone in your circle that is good, let them handle it, and you submit to them. This is possible, you know. And so, now, the next quick subject. You need to know what your income is, and you need to know what your expenses are. How do you figure that out? Well, you sit down together, and this is what I will make people do before they even get married. You sit down, I give them a little piece of paper, and I show them. It's not very difficult to figure out. You total up your combined income, because you're going to put it together, right? Okay? Your combined income. You write that down. This is the main thing you write down at the top of the page. Combined income, whatever that may be. Even if you own your own business, I know I've heard that too, but man, Rob, here's the deal, I own my own business. You can estimate. You have to estimate at some point. So you estimate. Now, write down all of your expenses in one column. And here's what I suggest to people to do. Put two columns. You do this in two columns. First one at the top, you write necessary expenses. On top of the other column, you write unnecessary expenses. So what do I mean by that? Okay? Under the necessary expenses, things like food, we need that. Clothing, house payment, rent, lease, whatever that is. Utilities for the home, propane, we live in Ramona, propane. The electric, whatever that is. Property taxes, insurance for both home, autos. Car payments, fuel for the cars. Things of that, some of them you may have to estimate. Some of it you may need to be better at saving receipts so that you can add those up and find out what an expense really is, you see. And so you put that down in one list and you add it up and you total it up and put it at the bottom. Under the unnecessary thing, you have to put things that you could do without. Okay? What do I mean by that? Things that if you had to, if it came right down to it, you could cut it out and save money and put it over into the necessary expenses column. Things such as cable TV. No one's going to rush the stage, huh? Notice how I got ready? Cable TV. You can afford it, hey, no problem. It only becomes unnecessary when you can't afford it. Okay? Entertainment activities such as, going out to dinner, going out to movies. Sports activities. So maybe it's sporting activities that you like to do. Man, I play softball three nights a week. I'm not saying you can't. I'm saying that gets put into the column that if you had to cut it out, you could. Sporting activities for your children. Little Johnny has to play soccer. No, he doesn't. If it's either little Johnny eating dinner or playing soccer, you might need to make a little, choice, you see. All right? So that becomes something that you could, get rid of. And I'm going to step on some toes here. And this time I will defend myself. I will prepare for a rush. I'm going to say it. Animals. They do fall in the unnecessary side. You do understand that. I know people, and this is, I'm not trashing anybody, okay? But we live in an interesting community where people spend $100 a month on a horse. Now, a horse is wonderful if you can afford it. And I know that's probably on the light side, right? I'm not a horse guy, so it may be even more than that. Big dogs that eat $100 worth of dog food a month and all of that, So listen, let me ask you a question. If it came down to it and you're coming and you're saying, oh, I don't know how I'm going to buy groceries for the family this week, but, Mr. Ed's out in the shed and he's got a, and they just delivered a bunch of, whatever they eat, hay and grain, there comes times when you have to make tough decisions, you guys, all right? There comes times when you have to make tough decisions. What are you going to do? Feed Mr. Ed, or are you going to, send your kids home to be with the mother-in-law? See, I mean, it's very, see, if your expenses, listen, if you Write those down, total them up. Add the two together, necessary, unnecessary. Find out what you got. Now, you have the other number at the top of your page that says income. If that totals more than what your income is, you got problems. One of Joel's quotes that I find is very interesting. Income and expenses. He says this, if your outgo exceeds your income, then your upkeep will be your downfall. There you go, all right? So, this is something, you know, that you need to take a look at. Now, never, listen carefully, all right? Listen very, very carefully. I'm going to touch on this, and then we're done. Never use your credit card to cover your expenses unless you know you can pay that credit card off at the end of the month. Well, let me tell you why. Do you know, some of you already do, some of us know this because we've been down this road. Do you realize credit cards can become a great blessing to you, but they can also be a huge, huge noose around your neck? When you're paying 17, 18, 20%, do you know how quickly that adds up? You know, we are living in a culture. I'm watching these commercials on TV. If, you know, we can help you deal with your credit card company. And listen, they say, if your credit card debt is $10,000 or over, do you realize that in this country, $10,000 credit card debt is the norm? That scares me. Scares me to death. $10,000 at 18% interest each month. You realize how fast that adds up? It'll be a noose around your neck. So never use your credit card to cover your expenses unless you know you can cover it by the end of the month. In fact, I would say don't use your credit cards at all unless you know you can pay them off at the end of the month. Because they're a ripoff, 18 to 20%. Do you understand something? When you put your money into your savings account or the bank, how much do you get for it? 1%, 2%? You borrow it back, what do you pay? 18, 20? Do you see something wrong with this picture here? Okay? So don't give the credit card companies what they don't deserve. That's why they're going after our children, going to colleges and trying to get these kids to sign up. And they use it to cover their expenses. That can be a dangerous, slippery slope that can ultimately consume you. And so here's the deal. I have just today just scratched the surface. Just scratched the surface. I've just made you uncomfortable. That's all. All I've done is just make people say, well, I'm not coming back here again. That's all he talks about is money. If you've been here for a year, you probably noticed we haven't talked about it one time in the past year. And I'm not trying to get your money. I want to help you. I'm telling you guys, the coming year could be, it very well could be, one of the most difficult years financially that this country has ever known. Are you wise like an ant? Have you prepared like the coney? Have you, you know, are you like a little gecko? Are you ready to hang on to the principles and the promises of God? So here's the deal. I'm going to throw you a lifeline right now. Joel is getting ready to start the Crown classes. If today I have talked about a subject matter that for you is a problem in your married life, I'm begging you, see Joel in the foyer right after the service, sign up for the Crown class. That class has helped more people become financially independent, pay off credit cards. Joel will take you through a process. The class takes you through a process by which you can get things back on track. He'll be in the foyer. He's taking signups today. It starts in January. The next classes will start in January. And I am begging you, don't wait until it's too late. Get it. Grab a hold of it now. See Joel and get into that class. Next week now, since I've only, you know, scratched the surface, the Crown class gets way beneath the surface. It'll show you how to learn how to do all this stuff. So, you know, because I know some of you are saying, okay, well, Rob, what if I'm in debt right now? I mean, you're talking to me, all right? Don't panic. You sign up for the class. Let Joel and that class help you through this process. Even if you've already messed up, even if you've already blown it, even if you're in big trouble right now, you meet Joel out in the foyer. Next week, we will finish the marriage series. It'll be done next week, I promise. And I want to share with you a principle that, if applied, it's a secret principle. I can't tell you. If I told you, I have to kill you. Okay? I will share it with you, and if you apply it, it will blow your mind. And I'll share that with you guys next Sunday morning, okay? So, you guys, let's pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you for your word. Thank you for the promises that are written in your word. May we be like the gecko lizard and hold on to them tightly, grasping a hold of them with all that we have. We might trust you, Lord, in these difficult days that may lie ahead. I pray, Lord, for my brothers and sisters that are here today that might be already heading down a slippery slope. May today be the day that they submit to you, submitting to your ultimate authority, because you know what's best for us. Help us, Lord, to be like the gecko, to be like the coney, to be like the ant. Help us to be, Lord, these wise little creatures that you have designed so that we might, Lord, be those that are standing when everyone else is falling all around us. We commit our hearts to you, Lord. May our time at the Christmas season be a great one. In Jesus' name, amen.